It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Our guest is former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Sean, thank you for being on the show with us.
Thanks, Anna. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, so you're here in Chicago for a special event, and we want to get to that, the why you're here part, in a moment. But got to ask you about Dancing with the Stars coming up in a couple of days here. You're a Monday. Are you ready to bust a move? Have you been in the dancing rehearsals, I'd imagine, for hours and hours and days? What's the deal?
Yeah, officially today is day one of week three. So we practice about roughly 4 hours a day. And I would say I'm improving.
Can you tell us what you're working on now? Is it the rumba, the tango? Are you able to tell us what style of dance you're working on next?
You know, they've asked us to keep our partners in the dance style until show night Monday.
Okay.
At 8 p.m. or 7 central in your case.
Right.
Because they want to add an element of surprise. So I'm not really sure that it would matter in my case what you call it. until I perform it, it might be insulting the style of dance.
Harder than it looks, I think. I think that's what we could say. It's fun nonetheless, and it's certainly, I'm sure, a welcome change from the stress of where you were. Where would you describe you are now with life in terms of kind of having some more calm and balance and, I guess, ability to, you know, look back and see what you were part of before when you were part of the hectic pace of the White House?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question, Anna, because there's a couple of things. One is you mentioned the hectic pace of the White House, and that's a very fitting term. And what I've realized is that because of that intensity, it took a while to be able to sit back and reflect on what had actually happened, the good and the bad, because you're going at such a pace that you don't have time to think about what has happened. You're trying to just keep up with the moment and to some degree get ahead of it. But you don't have a lot of time for reflection. So I've had a lot of time to think about what happened, my experience there, and just sort of philosophize about where we are as a country and what's happening in our country. And then, you know, it's been great to be able to spend more time with my family. I know that term gets thrown around a ton. But until you've been in this, you don't fully appreciate sometimes the time that people spend away from their families to go, whether it's, you know, do something like a campaign or serve in government or what have you, serve in the military. You spend a lot of time away from your family. You miss events. And being able to go to those things, I dropped my kids off for school, shortly after I left the White House, and it was the first time I had done it in quite some time.
Right. You're in Chicago for this event today at Northeastern Illinois University, and there are protests scheduled to happen. It's going to be you, Donna Brazil, kind of having a debate about politics, where we are now, and the 2020 election season. Obviously, she's from the Democratic side, you from the Republican side, but there are students, within hours of you being announced, Sean, I want to get your reaction to this. There were students who said, hey, he shouldn't be here. They signed petitions. They tried to get the university president to say you shouldn't be there. And the university president said, no, we're going to have a polite debate. We're going to have a difference of opinions, and we're going to put both sides up on stage, and we're going to learn from that. And I just want to get your take to, were you surprised it caused controversy, your appearance?
Not so much. I mean, I've spoken on probably 15 college campuses, everything from UMass Amherst to Penn. I've been out at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this. This is what is fascinating. I actually was applauded at the end of my speech at Berkeley.
Wow.
Which I was shocked by. But what I found was a lot of these students, and you know, look at the event that's happening today. You got 400 tickets that sold out a couple weeks ago.
Right.
There is a yearning, especially among a lot of young people right now, to understand policies and point of views that may be contrary to what they think they believe, and to understand different points of view, different policies, different ways of life. And so I mean, good on the university president for standing up for this, because, you know, I had a similar experience in college where my fellow students at the time blocked conservative speakers from coming to campus. Mm-hmm. I look back on that experience and I thought, you know, that is such a shallow point of view. The idea that the left, these people who preach tolerance and inclusivity, block people because they disagree with them, protest them. If they want to come and write a letter, I don't care. They have every right under our Constitution to come and protest and make their voices heard. But the funny thing is they're depriving people of understanding a different point of view. Look, Donna, who will be on the stage with me, is a friend of mine. I've known her for a long time. She was chair of the Democratic National Committee when I was at the RNC, and we worked together.
Well, she got it. Let's not gloss over that yet. She got into trouble of her own, and the Bernie supporters can't possibly be happy with what she did when the debate questions, and I know she's come to terms with that since and owned up to it and that kind of thing. But at the time, many Bernie supporters felt that she was undermining the system of democracy by picking a winner and a loser in the Democratic primary, favoring Hillary Clinton. So it's interesting to me, I guess, that there aren't any protesters for her. They really are there for you.
Well, you know why? I think two things. One is the right doesn't, I mean, first of all, who's, you're right. I mean, there's a subset on the left that had an issue with her among the Bernie supporters. And frankly, I think that they're less focused on the past than they are about Senator Sanders' current campaign. I get it, but you know, I think there are people on the right that could take issue with the fact of how the DNC handled all of the fact that they never turned over any of the servers that they were when they were trying to be hacked by Russia and hid them from the FBI. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could take issue with this. You know, like I said, I've spoken on countless, you know, probably well over a dozen college campuses. And what is interesting afterwards is I don't necessarily think people necessarily walk away and say, oh, my God, I agree with everything that Sean said. But they'll say, wow, I never understood things from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hope that based on my own college experience where I went to a school that largely was devoid of giving conservatives a voice, it deprived students of understanding the world that we live in, the world that is in this country, who cares what, you know, 45, 45, 50, 50, whatever it is, there's clearly a good chunk of people on one side of the aisle and another group on the other side. And to sit back and to self-select and say, I don't want any voices that don't agree with the agenda that I am supporting is pretty close-minded.
Well, you know, I think you make an excellent point in that it feels as if more and more there are a few places in America, it seems, where there is a free exchange of ideas, respectfully, when there are divergent viewpoints. We live in echo chambers, and we seem to be very happy and satisfied with that, whether it's social media or so many other places where we just shout each other down. But a university should be, by its very nature, a place of learning, respecting other opinions, taking them in as you form your own opinions at such a young age, and understand where the other side or the full range of opinions from people, where they're coming from. So to me, I do applaud Northeastern for allowing both of you to go up there, and I'm sure will be a respectful debate of the issues moving forward. Let me ask you about that, because as we talk about 2020, there is a debate tonight for the Democrats as they try to whittle away their pack. I know it's the other side. A lot of people like our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, are out front saying we're pulling too far left, that we're not electable. You've got Biden sort of polling at the top of the pack. Do you think that the Democratic nominee ultimately will be Joe Biden, or do you think it'll be someone else?
So here's my take on this. I currently am a believer in Sanders, and I'll tell you why. I think that if you look at the primary calendar for the Democrats, it starts in Iowa. Sanders did very well there last time. For all intents and purposes, he actually won. His strength is organizing. Iowa is a caucus state. You got 99 counties where organizing is key. You got to get your people to your caucus sites. Sanders, that's his strength. I think he actually, despite what any poll says, because remember, it's a small state, so polling isn't necessarily a strong indicator, because it's all about whether or not you can get your supporters to go to those caucus sites, sit there for hours on end, go to the corners over and over again, and ultimately prevail. I actually think that's a huge advantage for Sanders. I think right now the advantage is his going into Iowa. Then I think he goes to New Hampshire, where he's a native son. Yesterday, a poll came out that showed him taking a huge leap forward over Joe Biden. I actually think if he's on pace right now, he wins both of the first two contests. He loses South Carolina. It's got a heavy African-American contingent. I think that Biden and Kamala Harris will actually do well there. But then it pivots down to Nevada, where it's a heavy union state. Again, it goes back to Sanders' strength in terms of organizing, because it's a caucus state, heavy unionized. And so I think that Sanders has a chance to pull off a win in the first three or four contests, which would propel him well going forward. However, if he stumbles, my guess is that right behind him is Elizabeth Warren. I think Joe Biden is a falling star, not a rising one.
Interesting. You know, let me ask you something about press briefing, Sean. You were White House press secretary for, what, 6 months?
Yep.
Now we have a situation where we don't see White House press briefings. The president seems to just be out front himself. I can't imagine reporters having too much of a problem with that, hearing directly from the president. Are you surprised that it's sort of moved in this direction, where we are here now with the president sort of just sort of circumventing that process?
Well, it's not. Look, I get your point. I take issue with how it's phrased, though. Look, a press secretary's job is to speak in the absence of the principal. Right. So whether it's the president or the head of an organization or a company or whatever, if that person can't speak, the job of the spokesman is to go out there and do it. In this case, you have a president that by all measures is engaging with the media more than anyone has ever before. It's almost multiple times a day in many cases that you're hearing directly from him answering reporters' questions. Now, I know it's not physically in the briefing room, but I don't know why that matters. If you are hearing from the President of the United States multiple times a day, interacting with the media, where they're able to ask, you know, questions on whatever topic they want, then I'm really not entirely sure why you then need to go hear from a spokesperson in a room that they, you know, it's sort of, the issue becomes logistics right now, where they're saying, well, we'd rather have it in the briefing room. Why? You know, that's not how it works. They don't get to pick that. The president wants to have it in the Oval Office or meet with the press outside. That's fine. But democracy is being served. The press is being given the access to the highest government official in our country. And so, you know, look, I think that the briefing serves a utility. I hope, you know, and like you saw yesterday, you had Secretary Pompeo and Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin go into the briefing room, take questions, talk about some of the sanctions that were being issued, et cetera, some of the other issues that we're facing in foreign policy. So I actually think that when you look at what's going on right now, you are actually seeing more face time with the principals in our government that are making decisions, and less time with the appointed staff.
Mm-hmm. I take your point, and I think the whole nature of that White House press briefing took on a whole new life when this president became president. It became must-watch TV, and it was like a reality show, and it seemed there was a lot of there was some showboating going on with reporters, for sure. I remember everyone calling your name, Sean. I mean, maybe you're haunted by that to this day.
Yes,
like, when you're Sean, I'm like, oh my gosh, that would drive me nuts. But that was part of the job. I get it. And it felt like I guess it just took on a whole new life, and I wonder if you were really prepared for that eventuality.
You know, no, I joke with people, I've been at the Republican National Committee for about 6 years. I'd done well over 500 television appearances, and the closest I ever got to being recognized was in the sweater section of a Joseph A. Bank store. So to suddenly go from that, you know, I obviously knew that there was going to be additional notoriety from that job, but to suddenly turn into a situation where everybody, you know, is seeing your face, knows your name, is not something that I anticipated that level of intensity and scrutiny for by any means.
Certainly one of the tougher jobs in the administration, for sure, as well. Sean Spicer, we appreciate you giving us some time here. We can see you on Dancing with the Stars, and also you're in Chicago to appear at Northeastern Illinois University on the stage with Donna Brazile. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. And I don't think I never thought I'd say this in my life, but, you know, to everyone in your listening audience out there in Chicago, next Monday night, please vote for me. I never thought I'd ask for a vote.
Oh, my gosh. You're begging for votes, Sean.
I know.
What's going on?
I'm begging for votes. I never thought I'd do it. Maybe Rom could give me some tips how to, you know.
Is that important to you?
But, you know what? It would be fun. Look, the odds maker have me at 50-1. I'm supposed to lose right away. So I think, you know, I think beating the odds would be fun. But regardless, I'm going to have a blast.
I bet you will. Vote for Sean. All right, Sean. Sean Spicer, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoy Chicago.
One.